gone from being entirely out in the cold to being no longer labelled as criminals, to having laws to protect us, to having our relationships recognised.
I wrote a song honouring really Matthew's life and his family and the unconditional love that I believe that family represents.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. India's sex law battle gets a prime directive, MP Tim Barnett closes a chapter of New Zealand history, and what matters for Matthew and Randy is stopping the hate. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 18, 2008. The long-running challenge to India's anti-lesbi-gay sex law continued this week in the Delhi High Court as the Prime Minister unexpectedly got involved. The country's Home Ministry, calling gay sex the product of a perverse mind, wants to keep Penal Code Section 377, a remnant of British colonial rule banning unnatural sex. Supported by the Law Ministry, they've cited prevailing social mores and argued that repeal would create law and order problems. The Health Ministry, especially through its leader, Anbumani Ramadas, strongly advocates repeal, saying that the law drives gay people underground and hampers HIV/AIDS prevention efforts. Home Minister Shivraj Patil wanted the cabinet to issue a recommendation on the case during its meeting this week, but Ramadas was not there, so the cabinet issued a statement only saying that they'd agree with whatever the court decides. That prompted Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, who hasn't expressed an opinion on the case, to publicly order the two ministers to resolve their differences on the issue. The Delhi High Court itself has criticized the Indian government for allowing its ministries to submit conflicting affidavits in the case.
Judges also took exception this week when the Solicitor General, who's arguing for the government against repeal, cited biblical texts to support that position. Chief Justice A.P. Shah charged that this is just a one-sided version of religious doctrine which cannot be relied upon. Show us some scientific report which says that gay sex should be criminalized. The court asked for any World Health Organization reports on the subject and expressed support for the National AIDS Control Organization's affidavit arguing for decriminalization to fight the disease. The judges also rebuked the Solicitor General for suggesting that gay people are not a legitimate minority group and implying that court-ordered repeal would divide the country. The non-governmental organization NAS Foundation filed the challenge to the antiquated Indian law, charging that Section 377 unconstitutionally infringes on fundamental rights to life, liberty, and freedom of expression.
The Australian Senate this week passed legislation that would allow unmarried heterosexual and same-gender couples to use federal family law courts to resolve differences when their relationships fall apart. Current laws governing so-called de facto heterosexual couples vary in each Australian state or territory. The new legislation will establish a uniform nationwide system and does not differentiate between de facto heterosexual and same-gender couples. The government says the reforms will simplify the laws governing separating unmarried couples in areas including property ownership and other financial agreements, and will also make an often painful process less expensive. A series of technical amendments were added to the bill, so it now returns to the lower house for approval before being sent to Governor General Quentin Bryce, who's expected to sign the bill into law. The government is trying to make good on its election promises to reform dozens of federal laws that discriminate against gay and lesbian couples. Some members of the opposition have charged that such reforms threaten the traditional definition of marriage, even though Australian law specifically defines that institution as exclusively heterosexual.
In other news, comments about LGBT people seeking asylum in the UK by Lynn Homer, chief executive of the British Borders and Immigration Agency, have infuriated human rights activists. She told the Scotsman newspaper this week that immigration courts consider the practical consequences of possible deportation for each individual and that The simple presence of either a law or a culture that frowns upon homosexuality is not of itself a reason to grant asylum. Nico Jutin, policy manager of LGBT Youth Scotland, called Homer's comments astonishing and told the newspaper that judges often say something along the lines of, "You'll probably be fine as long as you keep a low profile. But if someone has fled the country because of their homosexuality, they are going to be closely monitored when they are returned." The UK has notoriously denied asylum in recent months to lesbi-gay refugees from homo-oppressive Middle Eastern and African countries. Just last week, Jojo Yakob, a young gay Syrian man, expressed fears for his life after a Scottish judge rejected his appeal of a deportation order.
The incoming editor of a provincial newspaper in Finland says she was fired before starting work because management found out that she's in a registered same-gender partnership. Johanna Korhonen also says she was offered 100,000 euros to keep quiet about the situation. However, CEO Kai Talan of Alma Media, which owns the local newspaper, said the company terminated Korhonen because she failed to reveal that her partner was involved in politics. Reports said Korhonen's spouse was running for a seat on the city council in Vantaa, a city of about 190,000 people near Helsinki. But Korhonen said that the couple had planned to move hundreds of miles away to the Lapland capital of Rovaniemi for her new job, making the political argument irrelevant. Even Finnish President Tarja Halonen has commented on the matter, telling reporters that she was shocked by Korhonen's firing.
9 in 10 U.S. LGBT teens have been verbally abused in the past school year, and almost half have been physically harassed because of their sexual orientation. That's the disturbing assessment in an annual National School Climate Survey released late last week by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN. The survey involved more than 6,200 self-identified LGBT students from all 50 states and the District of Columbia. It found that three-quarters of them hear slurs such as faggot or dyke frequently or often at school, and 9 in 10 hear anti-LGBT language frequently or often. That type of environment obviously makes learning more difficult. About a third of the teens said they'd skipped at least a day of school in the previous month because they felt unsafe. The study did find that students in schools with an LGBT-supportive gay-straight alliance experienced less harassment because of their sexual orientation and gender expression. But only about a third said there was a gay-straight alliance at their school. GLSEN Executive Director Kevin Jennings said that, "It's hard to believe that anyone who reads this report could continue to turn the other way as our nation's LGBT students are bullied and harassed at alarming rates. Every student," he said, "has a right to feel safe in school, free from bullying and harassment."
Meanwhile, a California appeals court this week upheld a judgment against a San Diego area school district for not protecting its LGBT students. Joey Ramelli and Megan Donovan were each victimized by relentless taunting and anti-gay slurs at Poway High School. Ramelli was physically assaulted and his car was vandalized. The two found the harassment so brutal that they each had to drop out and complete studies toward their high school diplomas at home. They sued the district in 2005 and were represented by the LGBT advocacy group Lambda Legal. During the original trial, the court was told that both Donovan and Ramelli reported the harassment to school officials to no avail. The jury found that the officials took minimal or no action at all and decided that the harassment was so severe and pervasive that they awarded $175,000 in damages to Ramelli and $125,000 to Donovan. Lambda Legal attorney Brian Chase said he hopes that by upholding the jury verdict, the California Court of Appeal for the 4th District is sending a message to other school districts. "We hope this lawsuit and the attention it has generated," he said, "will remind school officials everywhere that parents expect their kids to be safe from bullying and violence during school hours." The school district hasn't yet announced if it will appeal to the California Supreme Court.
And finally, homophobia can permeate college campuses, too. For a third consecutive year, the Equality Ride is trying to improve that situation. It's sponsored by SoulForce Q, the youth division of the non-denominational group whose goal it is to eradicate what it calls spiritual violence against LGBT people. Equality Riders travel by buses to various colleges and universities, many operated as Christian institutions, hoping to engage in constructive dialogue with students and school officials to make their campuses more LGBT-friendly. But equality writers ran into trouble twice this week, first at Palm Beach Atlantic University in West Palm Beach, Florida. The school student handbook forbids sexual activity that is inconsistent with biblical teaching, such as homosexual behavior. College administrators had restricted the writers to a sidewalk near a campus chapel. But when six of them attempted to enter the chapel for a morning service, campus security director Terry Wheeler called police to make trespassing arrests, telling the young people that, "You are an unwanted guest." The remaining equality writers held a vigil near the college throughout the afternoon. Their bus had also been vandalized the night before.
Three equality writers were arrested later in the week at Heritage Christian University in Florence, Alabama. The group always advises school administrators in advance of their plans to visit each campus. But after a university official read a letter stating that they were declining the request for dialogue, three writers were arrested for trespassing when they stepped onto the campus to deliver letters advocating the safety and acceptance of LGBT students. Equality Ride co-director Jarrett Lucas said in a statement that HCU trains missionaries to go beyond the walls of their school to spread the inclusive gospel of Christ, but today they chose not to uphold the principles they preach. That was the sixth stop on this year's tour. Equality Riders have visited more than 50 colleges and universities during the past 3 years, most of which, to varying degrees, have been welcoming.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 18, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
We'll pay a tuneful tribute to a tragic victim who still helps the world understand what matters later in the program. Openly gay New Zealand Member of Parliament Tim Barnett retires at the end of the current session after a 12-year career marked by key fights for justice and equality. As he prepared to make his farewell speech, Barnett and This Way Out Auckland correspondent Ross Stevenson reflected on how much has changed in New Zealand since the 1976 outing of politician and academic Marilyn Waring.
Tim, this week Parliament dedicated a rainbow room. A lot of people are intrigued by this, I'm sure. Tell us about how this came about, because you had a bit to do with it. It's a committee room, I believe, which has got special kind of decorations in it.
Well, over the years, and I guess starting in the 1930s with what's now called the Native Affairs Room, Parliament had space allocated to people either who were represented in Parliament among the MPs, so therefore there's a suffrage room which was put in 1993 to commemorate women and their vote and their contribution to Parliament. Or more latterly, it's sort of become a wider statement about diversity. So we have an Asian room, and we have a Pacifica room, and we have the women's room. But the obvious gap in terms of diversity was something to recognise both the Rainbow MPs, but more the fact that Parliament's been pretty important in our journey to full citizenship. And in fact, in recent times, the battles have been bigger for our group than the others in terms of getting legislation through. So that was when the Asian Room was commemorated. I thought to myself, well, here's a chance to maybe complete the series. And MPs from a number of parties approached the Speaker, and she agreed to that.
This is the Speaker's call, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the allocation of space in Parliament is entirely up to the Speaker.
I see.
Yeah. But since, I mean, she was approached by our two current Asian MPs about the Asia Room and by the Pacific Caucus of MPs about the Pacific Room. I mean, interestingly enough, if we end up with photographs of MPs in our room who have identified as rainbow through the history of Parliament, then the number is already bigger than either the Asia Room or the Pacific Room. And whereas some of the other rooms have got artwork in, this one is more about the campaigns that have been around Parliament. So at the moment there's a David Hindley series of photographs around homosexual law reform, when there are picture boards going in which has traced the history of law reform in relation to Parliament, including the early failed attempts to get law reform, the petitions, and some of the brave MPs from all sides who put their heads over the parapets, and some artworks, kind of relevant artworks from lesbian and gay artists. So, and also on for the opening on Monday, we had a panel from the AIDS Memorial Quilt. So it's the room carries on its normal function, but it's just got a bit of a special connotation.
Tim, there've been some interesting journeys within Parliament for some of our queer colleagues, and you know the name that immediately comes to mind is Professor Marilyn Waring, and I believe Marilyn was there for the unveiling of the opening. That must have been quite a moving experience for people to have her there for that.
Oh yes, yes, and Marilyn's always this extraordinary mix of somebody who's highly intelligent, intellectual and a serious academic, and somebody who is can communicate with extraordinary emotion. And obviously for her there was a lot of emotion in being in a space in that building where she sort of suffered so much, I guess, because of her sexuality. And she spoke, quite a lot about the impact it had on her, her relationship with her family, her feelings, sort of looking back on it now, the sort of questioning whether being the first, in inverted commas, out gay queer MP really means a great deal, because being out means different things to different generations, sure, different people. But I mean, positive in the sense that we've gone from being entirely out in the cold to being no longer labelled as criminals, to having laws to protect us, to having our relationships recognised, and now we have a bit of a space in the building.
Well, Tim, your valedictory speech is coming up this afternoon, and it's traditionally the sort of time where you rake over the coals of your experience in Parliament and try and make your colleagues laugh, I suppose. Without giving too much away, what are you going to highlight? What for you is the highlight of having been in Parliament? How many years is it now?
12 years. I often end up being so closely aligned with prostitution law reform and civil union. I mean, they're obviously mentioned, but they're not the core of it, really.
Right.
I mean, what I've tried to talk about, because I've got an electorate to address comments to, as well as a sort of wider network.
Sure.
It's really, I think, about this, how what this profession of representation of democracy is all about. Mm-hmm. And how we do it, and a bit about the emotion of leaving, I guess.
Well, I'm sure that that anybody looking back on your career, hauling it over as a piece of history, will recognise that you've made a really worthwhile contribution while you've been there. So thank you from our communities, I'm sure, for all you've done.
Not just a working parliamentarian with particular skills, but a man of great courage, I would have to say, too, to be prepared to front the bills that you've fronted, but with such dignity. And I hope your exit from Parliament has acknowledges the mana that you have, I'm sure, with your colleagues, but certainly in the communities who love you.
Oh, that's very, very kind of you to say that.
Okay. Well, look, Tim, all the best for the future. And thank you, Tim, for being with us.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
That was This Way Out correspondent Ross Stevenson in conversation with outgoing New Zealand MP Tim Barnett.
We've got good news, bad news, and good news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. The good news is that you can now hear free podcasts of This Way Out. To subscribe, log on to www.thiswayout.org. The bad news is that we're still owed thousands of dollars from our former online outlet, and that puts This Way Out in serious financial jeopardy. Stations get the program from us for free. You can get the podcast for free. Producing and distributing the program, however, is not free. But the other good news is that This Way Out's unique on-the-scene reports covering the fight for same-gender marriage equality from the world's first legal weddings in the Netherlands are now available in a 2-CD collection called Altard States. This Way Out listener supporters can get this and other special programs by visiting our website. Please say, I do, at www.thiswayout.org.
Hello, this is Judy Shepherd, the executive director of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepherd. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
This is Poudre Valley Hospital with a final update on Matthew Shepherd, Monday, October 12th. Matthew died shortly before 1 a.m. today as a result of injuries he sustained last week.
It was not the first time a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans person had fallen victim to brutally fatal homophobia, and it certainly was not the last. As the 10th anniversary of the death of Matthew Shepard is being observed, the foundation that bears his name continues to work for an end to anti-LGBT hate violence. This Way Out's Sherry Lund spoke with singer-songwriter Randy Driscoll recently about her contributions to the cause.
Randy, your song, What Matters, tell us a little bit about the inspiration for writing that.
I was living in San Diego, California, when I heard the horrific story of Matthew Shepard's death. And like everyone, I was just very moved and very saddened. And I had the opportunity to see Judy and Dennis Shepard, Matthew's parents, on the news, and I was really very moved and very inspired by their love, their unconditional love. So I wrote a song honoring really Matthew's life and his family and the unconditional love that I believe that family represents.
Since that time, What Matters has become the official benefit single for the Matthew Shepard Foundation. Is that right?
It was my intention that the only way I would release the song, which was very personal to me, the only way I would release it publicly was to make sure it was a benefit single, and our hope was to do something related to an anti-hate crime charity. And at that time, 10 years ago, the Shepherds actually began the Matthew Shepard Foundation. So it was at that time that they adopted the song on behalf of the foundation, and it became the official benefit single. And that was, well, we're coming up on almost 10 years now.
Speaking of coming up on 10 years, there's a special concert series that's happening now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I'm happy to. I'm traveling the country doing a series of concerts. Our goal is to do 10 concerts, raising $10,000 in honor of the 10-year remembrance of Matthew Shepard's death. We're certainly hoping to raise more than $10,000 for the work of the Matthew Shepard Foundation and the educational programs that they are doing right now. They're doing just wonderful work, and you can find out more about that work at MatthewShepard.org.
How much money has that single raised?
The single itself has raised almost $50,000 for the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and that's separate from some of the appearances that I've done, and also separate from the sheet music, the choral version, which is available at Yelton Rhodes Music. That is also 100% of the sheet music is also donated to the wonderful work of the Matthew Shepard Foundation. So I'm very proud to say those figures.
What Matters has also been featured in a couple documentaries and a movie.
The NBC film starring Staka Channing, also several documentaries, lots of small projects. We did a music video for it. There's a documentary about the song, and it was even featured in a commercial directed by Spike Lee about, I guess it was about 7 years ago. So it's just very exciting for us that that people are using the song in many, many different ways.
So for more information about Randy Driscoll, you can log on to www.randydriscoll.com, R-A-N-D-I, D-R-I-S-C-O-L-L. Randy, where can people find the song?
They can find it right now on my webpage. You can also go directly to MatthewShepard.org, and the single is there, and we did it specifically there in its entirety, including a very, very special message from Judy Shepard. People can go there, and 100% of the proceeds will go directly to the charity, so it's a nice place to get it.
Thank you for joining us, Randy.
Thank you so much for having me.
For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund. And now here's Randy Driscoll with What Matters.
You were the brightest angel heaven had ever seen. You walked in with the story to tell in 10,000 tongues to scream. Can you see? Doesn't your heart beat the same as mine? Heaven, I told you a thousand times, isn't the air in my lungs the same air you breathe? So who cares whose arms are all wrapped up in? Who cares whose eyes I see myself in? Who cares who I dream of? Who cares who I...
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Chris Wilson, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Ross Stevenson, and Sherry Lund contributed program material, Randy Driscoll sang What Matters, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WCRS Columbus, Ohio, CFXU Antigonish, Nova Scotia, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.